To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for a follow-up to an old tale once told around a campfire by a famed naturalist to the delight of an inquisitive orc who wished to hear of the adventures of his distant kin. In our last retelling, we explored the strange and savage deeds of several war bosses, with each one being so uniquely deranged that even their fellow greenskins were left scratching their broad brows in sheer bewilderment. And yet, as much as those tales may have seemed absurd beyond compare, I must now confess that they were merely but a prelude to some of the wildest of bosses ever to be found. The galaxy is riddled with countless tribes of these brutish creatures, with the orcs being scattered across every dust-blown frontier, every forsaken ruin, and every benighted star system, much to the dismay of the non-orky species. Wherever the orcs take root, it is only a matter of time before one among them grows larger, louder, and far meaner than all the rest. When such a figure emerges, the tribe will be compelled, often by clobbering their heads and stealing their teeth, to bend to his will, and thus a new orc will rise to the top and claim his rightful place as the war boss. But while many of these hulking tyrants simply lead their mobs into the nearest available scrap, a few will stand out for reasons so bizarre that even the most jaded of scholars will be forced to pause and to question whether or not these orcs ever really had a brain to begin with. We have previously learnt of several legendary bosses, such as Ghazghul, whose warpath led him not once, but twice to the fated world of Armageddon, sparking what was perhaps the most destructive war in greenskin history. Yet today, we will be learning of no such figures of comparable infamy. These are not bosses who should be considered as successful, nor effective, nor even as powerful, as they are, in fact, nothing more than a bumbling assortment of violent buffoons. Some of them, as we will soon learn, are far more obsessed with their own hobbies than of anything else, with their entire warpaths only being launched as a method to obtain new resources to fuel those curious interests. Others, however, are unquestionably mad, likely caused by suffering one too many hard blows to the old noggin, and they should really focus their efforts on hiring a pain boy rather than leading a doomed tribe. But for now, I shall recount this collection of blundering bosses whose deeds are no less ridiculous than they are destructive. So please, my dearest friends, I invite you to sit back and relax as we once again venture into the wilds to learn of some of the strangest, graceless, and downright brainless of the orc war bosses. Of all the oddities to ever stride across a battlefield, few were quite so stubborn or thick-headed as the war boss whom the orcs themselves only ever referred to as Skull Smasher. His obsession was rather simple and unashamedly crude, but he believed with all the clarity of orky logic that by smashing his forehead against an enemy's skull, he could steal their memories, their cunning, and perhaps even their very soul. The theory in his eyes was watertight. After all, when a foe died, their thoughts had to go somewhere, and why would they not find purchase in the nearest cranium? And naturally, the nearest cranium was always his own. Thus, from his earliest days, Skull Smasher went out of his way to knock heads with anyone unfortunate enough to face him. Nobs, rival bosses, human commanders, they all fell before his head-butting assaults, which he would proudly declare as having made him the cleverest and most tactically forward orc alive. His boys, for their part, nodded along, for while they might have doubted whether the boss truly gained any wisdom that way, They could not deny that his broad forehead was most assuredly a devastating weapon. Whole squads were seen to be flattened under the sheer density of his brow, which was said to be harder than the Ceramate hull of an Imperial tank. Over the years, Skull Smasher's antics became the stuff of crude legend. One cowardly Imperial officer, cornered and out of ammunition, reportedly surrendered his pistol to the boss in the vain hopes that he would be spared from a vicious cranial assault. Instead, the orc tossed the gun aside, then roared in delight and promptly caved the man's helmet and skull in with a single thunderous crack of his head. Rising from the corpse, he declared with great pride that he now knew all of the Imperium's secrets, and that he knew exactly where the next great battle could be found. His boys cheered, though it must be said that the only secret he seemed to reveal that day was of how to drool more enthusiastically. But the apex of his cranial-busting philosophy came during the Battle of the Duralis Reach, where Skull Smasher's warband faced the might of an Astartes strike force headed by a venerable dreadnought of the Crimson Hawks. This ancient war machine, boasting several long centuries of service, was revered by its chapter as both a warrior and a relic. But to the boss, it was simply the largest head he had ever seen, and so he let loose a war cry and charged with reckless delight. The duel was a spectacle unlike any other, with sparks flying as the dreadnought swung its power fist, only for the boss to duck low and smash his skull against its armored frame. Again and again, he rammed his forehead into the machine's sarcophagus, denting the venerable casing with every blow, echoing out with a dull thud, clearly audible over the constant thrum of war. His boys cheered madly, convinced their boss was about to steal the memories of a space marine who had lived for hundreds of years. The dreadnought, though a formidable veteran indeed, could not withstand the sheer madness of the assault, and with one final catastrophic headbutt, Skull Smasher caved in its chest plate and with his forehead delivered the fatal coup de grace to the entombed pilot. The field erupted in chaos. The orcs bellowed in triumph, while the Astartes howled in rage at the loss of the ancient brother. But Skull Smasher merely staggered back, swaying aggressively on his feet, in the same way as a grot who has had one too many gulps from a potent mug of fungal beer. His skull was clearly cracked, his vision blurred from the spilt blood, and his ramshackle mind, once simple, if not bizarrely confident, was now beginning to unravel. For you see, after years of smashing his brow against every skull he encountered, the boss was beginning to suffer the toll of his chosen path. From that day on, his war band noticed a curious decline. He still led his boys with bellows and bravado, but his speech grew slurred, his temper more erratic, and his borrowed memories seemed far less coherent. He would claim, at random, to know the secret recipes of Imperial rations, or the battle plans of mythical alien species, or even of the mating habits of squigs, facts which never proved to be particularly useful when waging war. The boys, however, still followed, as they wouldn't dare to question a boss who was mean and green enough to fell a dreadnought with his skull alone. Alas, the end of old Skull Smasher came quite ignobly, though we can gather that it was all but inevitable. During an unremarkable battle on some nameless frontier world, he charged into battle with his usual fervor, letting loose a slurred roar as he lowered his head for yet another crushing blow. But instead of striking down an enemy champion, he merely tripped over a stray grot, stumbled forward, and cracked his skull open on a rather pointy rock. his body slumped lifeless into the mud, while his boys stared in stunned silence. In that moment, many wondered if his memories and experience had leapt into the nearest skull, that being of the unlucky Grot who had tripped him. If so, it would explain why the little creature immediately ran away, screaming into the distance, never to be seen again. Deep in the interior of an orc world, we will hear of many strange tales, but none are quite as odd than that of the boss who named himself as Squigbelly. Unlike most orcs, whose ambitions stretch towards mighty conquests or endless piles of scrap, Squigbelly was utterly enthralled by a single creature, his own personal squig. Every orc tribe rears squigs of one kind or another. They serve as the beasts of burden, can be slaughtered for food or supplies. Sometimes they act as mascots, and sometimes they will be tossed into a battle to ravage an unsuspecting enemy. Most bosses are content to treat them as little more than tools, but Squigbelly was convinced that his beloved pet was far more than some primitive beast. He believed it to be a genius tactician, and that somehow it knew of exactly where the tribe should go in order to find the greatest battles. Whenever the squig burped, growled, or snapped its jaws, the boss swore that he could hear some form of strategic wisdom, with there being an entire gang of grots whose sole job was to try and translate the noises into easily decipherable glyphs. His tribe, at first, humored the obsession. After all, he was the boss, and as long as he could lead them towards a good fight, then the boys would follow. But it soon became apparent that Squigbelly's tactical genius was repeatedly leading them towards some peculiar ends. Time and time again, he would command his horde to march into the deepest swamps or to prowl across barren mountainsides simply because his squig had let out a particularly empathic squeak. Inevitably, these expeditions were never destined to meet with a rival army, and rather, the mob was always greeted by the disappointing sight of a few feral squigs, which delighted the boss to no end, as he believed it to all be some affirming part of his pet's grand design. The boys, however, grew restless. They had hoped for battles against squishy humans or against rival orcs, but instead they only found themselves endlessly herding, capturing, and wrangling the pesky creatures, all while listening to the boss cackling about the squiggy plan. Grumbles quickly turned into arguments, and in an orc camp, arguments can only be resolved with fists. One fateful night, the tribe split in two, with one side remaining loyal to Squigbelly and his beloved pet, and the other demanding an end to the lunacy and the appointment of a new boss. What followed was a civil war of truly orky proportions. Squigs charged against orcs, orcs bit at squigs, and Squigbelly himself presided over the madness with his pet at his side, interpreting each growl and chirp as some form of tactical command. The battle ended with the boss triumphant, not necessarily because of some grand strategy, but simply because those who opposed him had been devoured by the now resting squig. Grinning ear to ear, Squigbelly attributed this victory to his companion's brilliance and ordered the tribe to set out on a new expedition into the wilds. But this cycle would repeat again and again. Each time the tribe grew too weary of his obsession, a violent rebellion would occur. Yet the boss was always victorious and would always feed the losers to his divine squig. With every victory, the tribe dwindled further, but his pet only swelled larger and larger on the endless supply of green meat. By the time the last dissenters were swallowed, there remained only Squigbelly himself, and his monstrous beast, now bloated to such a size that it dwarfed its master. Undeterred, the boss remained faithful as ever. One night, sitting by the fire, he leaned close to hear the gurgles of his colossal companion, eager for its advice on how to rebuild his tribe. But this time, the squig did not huff, growl, or belch. It simply yawned, lunged forward, and devoured him whole. The great beast, with a very full belly, waddled into the shade of a cave, curled up on the regurgitated bones of the entire war band, and promptly fell into a deep and very satisfying sleep. It is no secret that every orc loves a big gun, but very few of their kind have arisen to the level of infamy as the one known as Grak. Though to the orcs, they will always remember him as Zapblaster. Being a former Flashgit, he had a well-known penchant for firearms of every size, shape, and color, only really caring for things that could shoot, blast, burn, or explode. Even in his youth, the boy adorned himself with every shooter and slugger he could get his grubby green hands on, and after becoming a boss, very little had changed. He would waddle into battle so weighed down by his weapons that his own boys had to hoist him upright just to keep him moving in the direction of the enemy. Yet to the astonishment of all, he was frighteningly proficient with the myriad tools, using them to blaze away in every direction, filling the air with so much lead that even the most well-disciplined of foes would break into unordered chaos under the storm of bullets. But the orcs are never satisfied with what they already have. Soon, Grak grew bored of conventional firearms and was rather fed up with carrying everything himself, so he called upon his mechs to think outside the box and resolve his bothersome issue. Initially, they came up with a suit of mega armor, which would ease his burden. But the boss scoffed at such an idea, and after smacking a few of the odd boys over the head, told them to find a mad doc, and to find a way to make himself into a weapon. The tinkerers obliged, and started bolting sputtering flamers into his torso, mounting rocket launchers on his shoulders, and then wiring a crude energy beam contraption into his ribcage. Slowly, he was becoming less of an orc and more of a living arsenal, but even this wasn't quite enough. One fateful day, Grak spied his mechs experimenting with their dreaded shock attack guns, which to the uninitiated are bizarre contraptions that can hurl a snotling through the immaterium to burst into an enemy's armor. But this sight filled him with a jealous rage. He demanded that the mechs build him a pair of these horrific weapons, then to use them as deadly replacements for his tired old arms. To keep them powered, the uncertain mechs chained a frothing weird boy to his back, using the orc's raw psychic energy to fuel the unstable machines. The result was monstrous and titanically terrible. The weird boy howled and thrashed, while the mechs laughed with glee, and as Grak flexed his new limbs, grinning wildly, he decided that time was of the essence and that he needed to test these guns on a suitably tough opponent. Overjoyed at the prospect of war, the boss ordered for his mob to set out to the imperial world of Vardos Secundus, where a regiment of the guard had dug themselves into a line of heavy fortifications built to defend a sprawling network of manufacturer. Striding into battle, the boss made his way to the front, raised his twin guns, and roared for the boys to watch closely. With a flash of green light, he fired, and reality screamed out in horror. In an instant, the entire planet vanished, being yanked wholesale into the churning depths of the warp. both orcs and humans alike found themselves adrift in a hellish storm of unreality, with shrieking demons clawing from every angle, and unfathomable beasts dragging the unsuspecting mortals into the deepest realms of chaos. Even Grak was taken aback, though his shock lasted no more than a heartbeat before it turned to glee. He bellowed out with indecipherable exhilaration, scarcely comprehending the scale of his act, before pulling the triggers again. With another burst of warp lightning, the planet popped back into real space, scarred by its voyage, while reeking of sulfur and brimstone, its surface still writhing from the touch of the Neverborn. The Imperial defenders stared in dumbfounded panic as the orcs howled in delight, until, of course, the boss fired again, and once more the world blinked into the Immaterium. So it went, back and forth, the entire planet flickering between dimensions as the gun boss laughed himself hoarse, firing wildly at no specific target, as though the fate of the entire world were nothing more than a sick joke meant to amuse a psychopathic beast. But with each shot, the weird boy on his back grew weaker, being drained by the impossible energies coursing through him. Yet the boss was having too much fun to pay any heed to the suffering freak. At last, with one final shot, the weird boy gave a strangled scream and collapsed, his body shriveling to a husk, only about the size of a grot. The shock attack guns sputtered and vomited out an ocean of light, promptly fading to reveal that the world was left stranded between dimensions, not fully in real space, yet not entirely lost in the warp. Its surface twisted, its skies boiled with half-formed demons, its seas froze mid-wave, hanging like shards of broken glass above all the doom. The orcs who survived cheered regardless, hailing their boss for giving them a new world of endless carnage. But Grak himself was nowhere to be found. All that was left in his place was of a dark green mist and a few battered components gently twisting through the air. The boys would later say that from time to time, you can still hear his laughter echoing through the ruined world as a booming, broken cackle drifting between dimensions, as if the boss himself is still firing, still playing with his guns, and still convinced that he had become the greatest weapon in all of existence. But from that day on, in their own retellings of this tale, they no longer referred to him as Grak the boss, but as Grak Zap Blaster. When it comes to an orc tribe, the boys can get away with pretty much anything they like, so long as they can defend their actions, usually by getting involved in a rambunctious brawl. But if a greenskin has to repeatedly fend off his kin, and if he always finds himself winning, then he will naturally grow bigger and stronger, until he is the toughest of the lot and may proclaim himself as the new war boss. As one notable example of this, there was once a boy who arose to the position of boss after being victimized by the tribe for his peculiar interests. Yet he rose to the top and became the petty warlord, known as Spice Gob. Unlike his peers, whose preparations for war consisted of sharpening their blades or overloading their shooters, Spice Gob instead insisted upon one sacred ritual before every fight: the making of a stew. He was utterly convinced, with a truly unshakable conviction, that nothing gave an orc strength quite like a bubbling cauldron of mysterious grub. On the eve of every battle, he ordered his grots to haul forward a colossal iron pot, supposedly looted from a Mechanicus forge, within which he would hurl squigs, fungus, multicolored slimes, stolen livestock, and very occasionally the unlucky prisoners from their past raid. As the bubbling concoction simmered, he would stand proudly over the pot, murmuring to himself that the fumes alone would put a few chest hairs on a pathetic grot, but that for the orcs, the hunger would make them far meaner, and even a little greener for the fight to come. And in a way, he was right. The stews were thick, pungent, and so violently spiced that they could melt the paint from right off of a tank. When the boys ate, their eyes watered, their throats burned, and some of them even collapsed from being forced to ingest something so vile. Yet, it was undeniable that as soon as the last drop was gone, that the orcs had seemingly turned feral, charging out towards the site of battle, frothing at the mouth, while being far more violent than before. They could feel their hot breath belching up the unforgettable scent of that atrocious brew. But some swore that the broth had filled their bellies with the rage of both Gork and Mork, driving them on with furious indigestion. Over time, Spice Gob only grew more experimental with his recipes. From his planet's jungles, he found bitter frogs that made his head spin. From the arid deserts, barbed cacti. And supposedly, he even managed to find a trove of exotic alien spices, thought lost in the wreckage of a rogue trader's cruiser. But with each new addition, the boys grew wilder and somewhat stranger. The tribe soon became infamous for their furious assaults, though they were mostly aimed at the other warbands of their world, who were gradually becoming sick and tired of this stew-eating clan. Spice Gob, however, was not content to remain upon this world. He had already scoured the planet for new ingredients, and now it seemed to be the time to take to the stars and to plunder the metaphorical pantries of the wider galaxy. Thus, he needed to cook up one final brew, one spitting concoction so potent that it could fuel what would soon become an era-defining war. With his motley tribe gathered in awe, he announced his plans, before producing a ragged pouch, claiming that within it lay his secret ingredient of the special spice. The boys all roared in approval as Spice Gob dropped a battered, conical object into the pot. For a heartbeat, nothing happened. Then the stew boiled, bubbled aggressively, and with a noise like a thunderclap, the entire cauldron detonated. The blast was apocalyptic, the likes of which had never been seen upon such an insignificant world. The shockwave flattened the camp, the fumes scoured flesh from bone, and the searing concoction splattered across the landscape, burning through armor and earth alike. When the smoke cleared, there was no tribe left to speak of. Only a charred crater and a disgusting stench in the air. Some would say that Spice Gob had procured a spice too potent for even the orcs to stomach, a seasoning so extraordinary that it turned the entire tribe into ash. Others, however, firmly state that he simply tossed in an unstable and volatile warhead, somehow thinking that it would translate its explosive power to the orcs themselves. Either way, the result was the same, and Spice Gob was relegated to a life retold only in myth. Our final story today pertains to a war boss whose mind was not filled with the usual vacancy of the greenskins, and rather it was filled with voices. This was Snazbrain, so named because from the day he rose to lead his tribe, he claimed that he could hear the words of Gork and Mork themselves whispering directly into his skull. The truth, as ever, was not quite so dramatic. In his youth, the soon-to-be boss had demanded that a mech find a way to give him a bigger brain so that he might outwit his rivals and rise through the tribe. With much hammering, welding, and shouting, the odd boy duly bolted a crude array of orky augmetics to his head before declaring the operation as a complete success. In actuality, he hadn't really done anything to make the boy any smarter, as all he had managed to do was to crudely affix a battered vox receiver to where most of his frontal lobe used to be. Still, It didn't take long for him to become the boss, and from then on, he would frequently halt in the middle of a march, cock his head, and announce that either Gork or Mork had something to say.
"Turn left!"
he would bellow, and the horde would swing into a new course.
"Dig in!"
he would roar, and the boys would start fortifying.
"Wah!"
he would scream, and the orcs would obediently hurtle themselves right into the fray. Inexplicably, these seemingly random orders were in fact bringing the orcs directly to the heart of every battle, and naturally, this utterly convinced the boys that the boss had truly been chosen by Gork and Mork. But how was it that the boss knew of exactly where the enemy would be? Was it really some prophetic word? Well, what the war boss was actually hearing were the distorted orders of an Imperial command post, whose vox signals happened to match the frequencies buzzing in his cybernetically augmented head. Every request for reinforcement, every desperate call for aid, and every scrambled defensive order was received by the boss and drew him closer like a moth to a flame. But as the years passed, the messages and voices slowly grew fainter. The orcs had succeeded in their conquest, smashing and destroying the Imperial bastions before slaughtering their operators. But now, the boss didn't know quite what to do. The augmetics in his brain had started to crackle, and where he once heard clear directives, now he only heard garbled half-sentences, maddening static, and bursts of indecipherable noise. He grew more erratic, more frenzied even, chasing phantom orders into barren wastelands before leading his warband to destroy a series of empty ruins because the gods had told him to. Then, one day, the voices stopped altogether. With a loud pop, the augmetic finally failed, and for the first time in years, the boss sat in total silence. He roared out at his mechs to fix his brain, but alas, they could not. In desperation, he bludgeoned a nearby weird boy in the hopes that it would bring the voices back. But again, this too was a failure. In the end, he declared that his tribe would scour the stars until he found the voices of Gork and Mork once again, proclaiming that he was the true prophet of the Greenskins, not Ghazghal, and that he would stop at nothing to regain their favor. And so, he led his warband on an endless and aimless war, charging from world to world, destroying settlements and strongholds alike, but never with any clear purpose nor direction, only with the forlorn hope that somewhere, hidden amidst the smoke and ruin, that the gods would speak to him again. And thus, my dearest friends, we close the book on another round of peculiar tales from the wide and unruly world of the orcs. Though these have all been rather comical, with the bosses being quite ridiculous in their own ways, let us be very clear that the orcs are still a brutally barbaric species who will stop at nothing to carve apart the galaxy in their truly terrible wars. For every boss, regardless of how their tale ended, just know that we have omitted the violence of their prior war paths, as they will have assuredly been most abhorrent. So you must realize that despite my portrayal of their kind, that in actuality they are a true plague upon our stars. There are war bosses who have fueled their tribe by enslaving the populations of many imperial worlds and tribes who will not bat an eye at eating their human prisoners. And so you should feel no sympathy to the bumbling group who I have presented. But then on the other side of this, some of you might dismiss these stories as nothing more than campfire legends, told by squabbling grots to frighten one another in the darkness of night. Yet time and time again, the galaxy has shown us that for the orcs, no tale is too ridiculous to be true. Their sheer stubbornness, Their appetite for mayhem and their crude imagination will ensure that they can bring whatever absurd desire into reality. For every orc boss who rises, there will be another who falls before them. And in time, these bosses will also be replaced by a larger rival, with a plan so foolish that only a greenskin could believe it. And so let us part here with a fond farewell, and with the knowledge that somewhere, out in the sheer vastness of the galaxy, another orc is already stumbling his way into the status of legend. Perhaps he will seek to wage war against a blazing star, or to clobber the Emperor himself, but there will always remain a constant that they will seek to lead the boys on a truly mighty war. But for now, my dearest friends, I must thank each and every one of you for lending me your ears once more. And I bid you, as always, with a very warm goodbye.